Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today's episode is about a great topic, I think. It's a very popular topic. We're going to talk about the fat loss peptides. Specifically, we're going to talk about semaglutide and tirzepatide, otherwise known as Ozempic in the case of semaglutide or Mounjaro in the case of tirzepatide. Now, depending on what camp you sit in, you're either in the camp of people who believe that these things are the best thing ever, or you're in the camp of people who think that these things are a horrible idea and a big fat cheat and prevent people from doing the work that really needs to be done. And I sit further towards the people who think that these things are the best. However, I do think they need to be used properly. And we're going to talk about what that means in this episode. And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other stuff. But before I do that, I want to thank you for being here. I want to thank you for listening to the podcast. I'd like to encourage you to leave a review for the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to it on. And also head on over to natnidham.com where you can sign up for my newsletter where I share all kinds of cool stuff every week. Last but not least, on natnidham.com, you can also get information about my private membership community called the BSP community, where I do live Q&As on a regular basis. Now, judging by the numbers of questions that I get on social media, people have a lot of questions. So if you want me answering your questions, you can have two options. One is you can submit them through social media, like on Instagram at Natalie Nidham, and I'll try to keep track of them and answer them as I do the solo episodes. Or you can join the BSP community and I will answer them for you there live. All right, let's jump in. So let's talk a little bit about the benefits of these compounds. And let's actually, before we do that, let's talk about how they're different. All right, we have semaglutide, which was the first one to come out and get approved. It's approved for type 2 diabetes as well as for weight loss. And we have tirzepatide, otherwise known as Mounjaro, which is a dual incretin. So both of them are GLP-1 agonists. The difference is that tirzepatide is also a GIP agonist. Now, let me see if I remember all the words here. It's glucose-dependent insulinotropic peptides. That's what GIP stands for, which is why we call it GIP and not by its name. And so the tirzepatide, which was the second one to come out, 100% seems to be a better product in the sense that more people get better results from it. Now, I will say that one of the big studies that I read comparing the two was not super fair because they were comparing a 1 milligram dose of semaglutide to up to a 15 milligram dose of tirzepatide. Now, it's not as bad as it sounds because tirzepatide gets dosed differently than semaglutide. They're about 1 to 5, but nevertheless, semaglutide, they held at a much lower dose than tirzepatide. So it's not really fair to compare them that way. Having said that, typically we see that there are more people have more severe side effects with semaglutide. That's not everybody. There are a lot of people using semaglutide very successfully. So if you're a person who's using semaglutide, you're feeling great, you're getting good results, there is zero reason to jump over to tirzepatide. Sometimes people hit a wall with semaglutide, that GLP-1 receptor maybe starts to get a little bit tired, like who knows what happens, they plateau. If you've plateaued for a month or two, then it would be a great idea to speak to your practitioner and see if you should consider using tirzepatide instead, because what happens with tirzepatide, because it's a dual incretin, it works through two different pathways. So that gives your body kind of options in terms of how it's going to respond to the drug. And it just seems to be that much more effective. The other interesting thing about tirzepatide is for whatever reason, the side effects from tirzepatide, which are not different than the side effects from semaglutide, seem to be a little less. So people maybe get a little less nauseous, they get a little less tired, but that doesn't mean that it never happens, because I've seen people get super tired or get very nauseous from both of them. The most obvious answer there is to start at a very low dose, start at the starting lowest dose. So that's 0.25 milligrams for semaglutide, 2.5 milligrams for tirzepatide, and sit there for about a month. Allow yourself to get acclimated before you bump up the dose. That 2.5 milligrams on tirzepatide is considered not to be like a particularly effective dose. It's just like an introductory dose to allow the body to get used to it. Having said that, I've seen a lot of people, including me, actually get really great results at 2.5 milligrams. That may be because we are not quite as resistant to fat loss as other people. A lot of the studies are done on people who have a lot of weight to lose. And so for those people, they probably need a bigger stimulus to really get their system firing the way it needs to. Okay, so semaglutide, a great product. Sometimes what we do see, though, is more side effects, more nausea, a little more fatigue, and than we do with tirzepatide. So before I keep going now, I'm going to talk a little bit about how these things work. Before I keep going, I do want to say that there are some contraindications with these compounds. For the most part, they are not common, but they do happen. So the ones that are the least common, or the ones that have yet to be observed in humans, if you go, there's an FDA website where they talk about these compounds, and they talk about the health risks. One of the health risks, which is a very specific form of cancer of the thyroid gland, has only ever been observed in rats, never been observed in humans. So if you have a history of thyroid cancer, it's a good idea to stay the heck away from these things just in case, right? You're going to have to look at other strategies. But with people who are relatively healthy, who've not had a history of thyroid cancer, from what we've seen so far, we've yet to really see an event where someone develops that type of thyroid cancer from using these compounds. The second black box warning is pancreatitis. We've definitely seen this happen. It is, again, it's not overwhelmingly common, but it can happen. I've seen it in my communities. I'm not sure that we know why, but I will say that if you're going to be using these for a whole bunch of reasons, including saving your pancreas, it would be a really great idea to step away from the booze. If you're trying to lose weight anyway, stepping away from the alcohol is a good idea, right? In addition, cutting back on sugar. Now, the good news is that these compounds are going to help you to do that anyway, and I'm going to explain to you how in a second. But pancreatitis definitely can be a thing. If you have a history of pancreatitis, once again, these compounds are most likely not a good idea for you. The next one that has gotten a fair amount of airtime is gastritis, or gastroparesis and or gastritis. And that's like this kind of, it's almost like a paralysis of the stomach, which sounds horrible. And frankly, it is horrible. Now, it is something that is commonly seen in diabetics. So is it because the person was diabetic? Is it because of the medication? Probably because of both. But you need to be aware that there is a possibility that things could go sideways. Haven't seen much of this, but it doesn't mean it can't happen. So be aware, and especially if you're one of these people who just has a few pounds to lose and just wants to shave them off, think about, is this really worth it? Is it worth it to do this? Because if you just have a few, like, you know, I don't know, 5 to 7 pounds to lose, maybe in your case, you would be able to dial in your nutrition and dial in your workouts and dial in your lifestyle and get the results that you're looking for without resorting to using one of these compounds. Okay. So for the rest of everybody else, for postmenopausal women who are stuck, for people who have been yo-yo dieting their whole lives and have now woken up one morning and they're just like, you know, they're just carrying way too much weight, which is making it miserable for them to even think about exercising. They've got crazy food cravings. They can't control their eating, and or they're already not eating enough, but they can't really move, or they are moving and they're not getting anywhere. So basically you're stuck. Considering these, talking to your health provider and considering these compounds is probably something that is on the table for you if you're open to it. So let's talk a little bit about how they work. right? Like, what is it about these compounds that help, that is so effective at helping people to lose weight? So everybody talks about loss of appetite, and definitely because they increase your satiety signals, because they slow down gastric emptying. So they do slow down transit time of food through your system. They help you to feel fuller, faster, and longer. Right? But that means we need to make sure that our digestion's dialed in. So I know a lot of practitioners who will recommend that their clients or their patients, if they're doctors, use digestive enzymes when they're using these compounds. Because even though the food's going to be sitting there longer, they want to make sure that the food's broken down properly so that when it, by the time it does make its way through the GI tract, it's in a good condition for absorption and for moving through the system. Okay, so that's number one. Now, the not even the double-edged sword, a side effect of slowed down gastric emptying or slowed down gastric motility overall is constipation. Now, we see constipation a lot more with semaglutide than we do with tirzepatide, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen in both cases. I will also say that a lot of people come into this constipated to begin with, right? A lot of people do not have solid, good bowel habits every single day. So if that's you, you're going to want to make sure of a couple of things. You're going to want to make sure that you stay hydrated. Also, because your food reward systems in your brain are being turned down a little bit, our drive to drink might go down. So you might have more of a tendency to be dehydrated, which we know is the enemy of good gut motility. You're going to want to make sure that you're getting enough fiber. And that may mean that you may need a fiber supplement. Because here's what's going to happen. You're going to be eating less food. And so sometimes it's harder to just get from the food what you need. So you may need a really good fiber supplement. And there's, I'm trying to think of a good one. I can't remember the name of the one that I'm using right now. I'll put the name in the show notes. But there's some great ones out there. Basically, you want something that has a mix of soluble and insoluble fibers. Actually, one of the ones that I'm using right now is from a company called Morphous, and it's sun fiber. And the only thing with fiber, if you've not used it before, start low, start slow, and build up gradually. Okay, so you're going to need fiber. You're going to need also a lot of water, hydration. And thirdly, you're going to need to take care of that microbiome. Right? Because one of the things we're going to be doing here is we're going to be rebooting our system. We're going to be rebooting the way that we eat, our lifestyle, all the things. And the microbiome has everything to do with how you break down your food, everything to do with how you absorb calories, the different nutrients that are being produced by your gut bugs for you. And of course, it's going to affect whether you're constipated or not. So getting on a good probiotic is a good idea. One strategy I really like to use with people is to have them do a gut microbiome test to give them a sense of their strengths and weaknesses in the gut microbiome. And the test that I really like will give you recommendations about different strains of probiotics you want to look for to help to rebalance your gut. The test is called Vitract. And the reason why I like it so much, quite apart from the fact that it is fantastic, and they may give you amazing recommendations both on the food side and on the supplement side, but it's only, I think in the US, it's only $150. So this is the kind of test that you can do. You can change your habits, and 3 months later, you can repeat it to make sure that you've basically are seeing the change in addition to experiencing the change. And lastly, for constipation, chow down on that magnesium, right? I will say that when there have been times when I feel that things have come to a grinding halt in my gut, I will do the magnesium loading program by Bioptimizers with Magnesium Breakthrough. And it's on their website, or if it's not on the website, send me a note. I'll send it to you. It's basically you amp up your magnesium intake over a few days, and it's like a 6-week program, and it is amazing. And I find it's a really great reset. So magnesium, hydration, fiber, and probiotics, all a really good things to look at for constipation. Okay. So we talked about satiety. We talked about slowing the gastric emptying. How else do these things help us to lose weight? Well, they make us more insulin sensitive, which is great. It's especially great because they also improve our pancreas's response to the intake of glucose, of food. So you make more insulin, an appropriate amount of insulin in response to food, and your insulin receptors become more sensitive. They particularly become more sensitive also at skeletal muscle. So this will help us to get back into the world of movement and exercise for most people. And I know that there's a big narrative out there about muscle, lean muscle loss. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But for now, know that your insulin, that if you're very insulin resistant, it will help to reboot that insulin sensitivity. It's going to help to make things more sensitive to insulin. So helping to put that glucose away. So gastric emptying, slowing gastric motility, we've got improved insulin sensitivity. But here's where, like, there's so much magic to this stuff, right? Number two, four is that it's going to bump up your resting metabolic rate, right? So it's going to make you basically turn up the heat on your furnace. It's going to have you burning more calories at rest. Not a huge number more, but some more. Now, where people might see this show up is that their resting heart rate may go up, and their heart rate variability, if you're one of those people that's wearing an Oura ring or one of these wearables that measures your heart rate variability, you may see your heart rate variability drop a little bit, right? Because you're going to be in more of a sympathetic nervous system, sympathetic state, and that resting heart rate goes up a little bit. So if you suffer from, let's say, high blood pressure, this is something you're going to want to keep an eye on with your doctor. But for most of us, it shouldn't be too much of a jump, and it should resolve over time. But that increase in resting metabolic rate, that more burning more calories at rest, works in our favor. Another way that they work is they actually have an effect on the food reward centers in your brain. So that means your drive to eat goes down. Your cravings will come down a bit. You will notice there's a little less urgency to eating that favorite snack or to snacking all the time. And for some people, they completely lose the urge to eat for a period of time. And those are the people that really have to be careful. And we're going to talk about that as well. As a matter of fact, these compounds are being investigated for helping people with addictions. It can help people to drink less or to come off certain drugs. So there's other investigations going on right now to see other ways that they can help. Hey guys, I'm actually interrupting myself to thank our sponsor for this episode. If you've been following me for a while, there's no way you haven't heard me talk about Level Up Health, one of my absolute favorite supplement brands. And the founder, Kyle Vanderleest, is a gem. This is a guy who spares no expense when designing stacks to be the most efficacious and even just the most convenient, right? Level Up Health's product range is truly unique, and their Ultimate GI Repair, which is their flagship product, is a standout product when it comes to gut healing. It combines orally bioavailable peptides along with things like tributyrin, L-glutamine, zinc carnosine, like just everything your gut needs to heal. It's been one of these products that I continually get amazing feedback from my community from. And he's got other formulas. He's got one that I'm using right now that addresses liver detoxification called Complete Liver Complex. He's got one to help with inflammation reduction. He's got others for metabolic function and even body composition. And over again, community members rave about these products. Now, a lot of these formulations were created not only to address that specific health goal, but also to help reduce all of the many products you would have to normally combine to get to your goal. Now, Kyle is constantly innovating and expanding the product range. Recent additions include an oral GHKCU stack, as well as a tributyrin stack for gut health that also includes a couple of probiotic strains. Now, to learn more, check out the website, levelupHealth.com, and level has no E's in it. So LVLUpHealth.com, and make sure to use code NAT10 to save 10% off your purchase. Let's get back to the episode. The other aspect of health that they're being studied for is Alzheimer's, because in Alzheimer's, we know that in some people, they have developed what's called type 3 diabetes, or what some people refer to as type 3 diabetes, where their brain cells become insulin resistant. And so this means that the glucose can't get to the brain cells. The brain cells start to die. The brain loses energy and things start to go sideways, right? Nobody wants a brain that has no energy. So they actually have benefits for the brain as well. What other benefits do they have? They help the heart. Because why? Because better insulin sensitivity, and that helps the heart to be, now the heart is a muscle, helps the heart to work better. Not to mention the fact that if your triglycerides drop, which is another effect of these things, people's triglycerides come down, their HbA1c, that 3-month report card on glucose, that normalizes as well. All of these things contribute towards being healthier and being able to function better. There's even some studies that are showing benefits for people who have kidney issues. Now, on the kidney side, you have to be careful, because if you have compromised kidneys, you'll need to speak with your physician. Number one, you're going to make sure that that hydration thing doesn't go out the window. And number two, where the main caveat on using these compounds is to eat more protein. If you really have kidney issues, eating more protein may or may not be the right thing for you, or you may have to be mindful of how you get that protein in. I'm going to talk about a couple of strategies in a minute, but for people with specific health issues, know that you may have to work with your physician and or practitioner to make sure that you tailor how you use these compounds to you so that they are good for you and don't turn around and bite you. Now, another area that seems to benefit is the liver. Right? There are studies that are showing that people with fatty liver, so fat in the liver, which is not a good sign, that fatty liver starts to go to resolve. So there's a reduction in fat adiposity in the liver, which is always a good thing. All right. So we're more insulin sensitive. We're burning more calories at rest. We have fewer cravings. We get fuller, longer, faster, and our transit time is slowed down. These are all wins. And you put all of that together and you start to see these effects of weight loss. Now, the good news is that people start to lose weight even before they change their lifestyle. The bad news is if you don't change your lifestyle, you won't get the full benefit of what you're doing, right? So number one, changing your diet to be a very nutrient-dense, healthy diet. Number two, get moving. You need to work out, because here's what does happen. Any diet that helps you to lose weight is going to cost you muscle. This using these things is no different. So if you're using either of these compounds, you must be exercising and you must be fueling your muscles with adequate protein. Because if you don't, your body is going to say, you know, this muscle stuff, it's awfully metabolically expensive. We're just going to dump it. We don't need it. Right? So you must exercise. Now, exercise for you may look different than exercise for your neighbor who's been a lifelong exerciser. For them, they may need to hit the gym and lift heavy weights 3 or 4 times a week and really push the needle on exercising. If you're someone who's been sedentary for the last 10 or 15 or 20 years and has been carrying around a lot of extra weight, exercise for you may look like doing a 20-minute walk after each meal. That might be just enough to get you started. But the good news is that once you start and you start to feel better, it's going to build. And the reason why you want to put on that lean muscle now is because that's the stuff, that's the material that's going to allow you eventually to come off these things and not put the weight back on. The people who get into the worst trouble are people who lose a ton of weight, lose a bunch of muscle, stop using these compounds, go back to their not so great eating habits and have lost the muscle that is ultimately the engine that burns the calories, ultimately the engine that stores that glucose as glycogen. So we must at the very least maintain lean muscle, if not build lean muscle. Biggest mistakes, misconceptions for GLP-1 for these compounds is that you're going to lose your muscle for sure. So the biggest mistake really is not changing your diet. It's not paying attention to your lifestyle, the sleep, all the things. And ultimately that you're just going to have to take it for the rest of your life. There are certain people who it looks like need to stay on a very low maintenance dose long-term. We don't have 20-year data on this stuff just yet, but I will say that there are a number of anti-aging docs that I know in this regenerative space who actually put their patients on a very tiny dose ongoingly because they think that it's that good. Because they think that keeping people's blood sugar down, right, is that important in keeping them insulin sensitive. So it seems like they can be used long-term at a very low dose. I'm not going to sit here and say for sure that's true. We don't know necessarily, but our goal should be to come off them at some point, to be able to step away and not need them. And I do know people who step away for months at a time, may do 1 or 2 or 3 months to tune in a little bit and then step away. If you allow yourself to lose the weight slowly and gradually, and this is one of the big mistakes that I see people making, is they want to lose 30 pounds or 40 pounds fast. They want to drop the weight right now. And I get it. I get that you found something that works and you're like, okay, well, if 5 milligrams is going to help me, then 10 milligrams is going to help me more, and 15 is going to help me even more than that. Know that. Give your body time to adapt to your new weight. Give your brain, your hypothalamus, where that set point is set, give it time to adapt to this new world that you're in. Give yourself time to change your lifestyle, change your diet. Slow and steady wins the race here, right? The people I've seen who've been the most successful have lost weight gradually over time, not too fast. And after a period of time, they notice that they come off of it. Some people have maintained that fat loss for a year, 18 months. Again, I don't have 20-year data to share with you, but if you've done the work, there's a better chance you'll be able to come off these things and not have to use them continuously. But you need to give your body the chance to adapt, and you need to make sure that that fat loss is slow and steady and that you're replacing fat with muscle so that you can burn more calories at rest and, frankly, feel better, look better, and be healthier in a million ways. All right. So is there anyone who shouldn't use GLP-1 or GIP agonists? For sure. I mean, if you're pregnant, I think it's a bad idea. Number one, you have other things to worry about. Having said that, if someone is a type 2 diabetic, but I don't think they're approved for pregnancy, but for sure, if someone is pregnant, then they must speak with their doctor about this. If, let's say, they're carrying enough extra weight that it's too horrible for them. But that is a discussion with a doctor. Number two, someone with a history of eating disorders, this is probably not a great idea for those people, because that's just going to bring back some of the, it's going to bring back some of those dysregulated eating habits. And so it becomes a slippery slope. So I would say people with a history of eating disorders, this is probably not a great strategy for you. Like I said before, people with a history of pancreatitis, people with a history of any kind of thyroid cancer. And of course, if you have a history of things like gastritis or, you know, paralysis in the gut, whatever the case may be, these will not be a good idea for you. So they seem to be pretty safe for most people. But if you have any kind of history of these kinds of issues, and maybe even others, if you have a complicated medical history, you're going to want to speak to your physician before you start using something like this. So using them safely, like I said, if you do the work, lean in, get that protein in. So how much protein is it, Nat? So I will say that the protein requirements are fairly high. I would say somewhere between 0.8 to 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight. Now, listen to that, ideal body weight. So that means that, let's say you're clocking in at 160 pounds and you know that your target is 130 pounds. You want to feed 130 pounds of you, not 160 pounds of you, right? So if, let's say, you say, okay, I'm going to work out. So what we're wanting to get in here is 130 grams a day of protein. This is not going to be easy. It's not easy, frankly, when you're not on these compounds. But when you are on these compounds, it gets even harder because you're less hungry. So some of the hacks that I use with my clients, and that a lot of people have kind of tapped into, is, number one, prioritize protein. Eat good quality protein. Eat your protein first. Make that the first thing you eat off your plate. Number two, probably, even though you might want to do some kind of 12 to 14 hour fast between the last meal of the day and the first meal of the next day, I would say that if you're trying to lose weight and you're using these things, try to eat breakfast and try to eat a protein forward breakfast. Try to get in your three meals a day because you're not going to be able to eat great big meals, right? So you're going to need to eat three meals a day, and it's okay. You're going to be fine. You don't need to fast all the time. Save the fasting for another time. If you want to do one day a week of fasting, you can, but I would say be careful that you don't completely starve yourself, especially at the beginning when your appetite really gets suppressed. So eat protein first, around 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight. If you can't get it in food, oh, and this is the other thing, start using hydrochloric acid digestive enzymes, right? Help take digestive enzymes to help break down that protein because protein is the hardest thing to break down, really. The other thing that I have people use is essential amino acids. So that's EAAs. The ones I'm really liking right now because they taste amazing. And I was using tablets for a while and tablets are great, but you know, we can only take so many supplements. I really like the Keon Aminos right now. The mango is my favorite when it's cold. It's like a delicious drink. And I will do a dose of Keon Aminos first thing in the morning, and I'll do another one in the evening with my dinner time so that I'm doubling down. And that gives me that extra protein hit that I need to supplement what I'm eating during the day. And that's even when I'm not using any of these compounds, right? When I'm lifting heavy and I'm working out, I'm giving my body those extra building blocks that it needs to build and repair. So essential amino acids are a great, great strategy. The next nutrient you're going to want to take care of is healthy fat. I wouldn't go too overboard on the fat, but you do need a little bit of healthy fat to absorb your nutrients. And then eating your vegetables that grow above the ground primarily, right? The problem with the starches is they're going to fill you up and you're probably not going to get your protein in. So eat your protein first and then have some great not too dense vegetables, but that are very nutrient dense. One class of these vegetables that I really like are things like broccoli sprouts and like sprouts in general, because they're very nutrient dense. They're very tiny. They take up no space in your stomach. They make a great addition to a salad. And they're really, really easy. Okay. So nutrient dense. If you don't like vegetables or you can't get them in and you just don't have the space, then find yourself a good greens powder and use that instead. What is it? Designs for Health has a greens powder called Paleo Greens. That's amazing. They also have Paleo Reds for the reds. So I know that for some physicians, they will build into their patients' plans that they will be using their digestive enzymes. They'll be using the essential amino acids. They'll be using a good greens powder and a good reds powder and prioritizing protein. And that's a pretty good formula for fat loss, right? Because it's not very energy dense, but it's very nutrient dense. And there's a difference between energy dense and nutrient dense. Energy dense means it's very high calorie. Nutrient dense means you're getting all the micronutrients, the vitamins and the minerals that you need. How long should you use them? That's going to depend on the individual. And like I said, there are a certain group of physicians right now in the anti-aging space that are recommending their patients use these at a very low dose ongoingly. That's a decision to make. That's a conversation to have with your physician. That's a very personal decision. And how to taper off? Well, like I said before, how to taper off is how you built in. You're going to start at the lowest dose. The other last thing I want to say is use the lowest dose you need, right? Use the lowest dose that you need to see maybe a pound a week weight loss. If you're losing a pound a week or every couple of weeks, once you get closer and closer to your goal, then you are on the right track. You're doing great. That's all you need. All right. Don't worry about the person next to you that's lost 10 pounds in a month. Maybe they have a ton of weight to release. But if you're the closer you get to your goal, the slower it's going to go. And that's okay. Resist the temptation to double or triple your dose. Just stay at that lowest dose that you where you see results and resist the temptation to increase. One thing I will also say for people who hit the wall with semaglutide, sometimes they plateau, they just stop losing. They're not, their body's not responding anymore. For those people, sometimes we see that switching over to tirzepatide can be a really effective strategy. All right. I think that's it. I think I've gone over half an hour. Hopefully you got some good information. If you have more questions, make sure that you reach out to me. I'll be on social media, maybe join the BSP community. We're doing a program in there for people who want to learn how to use the GLP-1 agonist better. So there's an opportunity to do that with me. But if not, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you again real soon. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, nattnidham.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.